Good morning and welcome to another episode of Radio Wild. I'm your co-host today. My name is Alan Lacey, and Chris Anderson, my other co-host, he's unable to be here, but he's been extremely busy working on various projects for the Wolf Education and Research Center, and today's no exception. It's the first Monday of the month of April, which means it's time for Radio Wild to be aired, and we have a great program lined up for you today. We'll be talking with Mike Keckler from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game about wildlife management in the state of Idaho, which is also where we happen to run the Wolf Education and Research Center over there in Winchester. I don't know about you, but I've been really enjoying the spring weather we've been having lately. If you haven't had a taste of spring yet, don't worry, it's on its way. But it's a reminder to pick up that camera, and if you happen to see any interesting wildlife, I mean, the birds getting more active, you'll start to see a lot of more wildlife moving out and about, especially as summer starts to come along. So keep that camera handy, take some photos, and if you get a cool photo that you like, send it our way. You can post it onto our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/wolfcenter, and just post it there, and you never know, maybe we'll share it and post it to all of our followers. It's a great way to help educate people about how to get connected to wildlife and nature, even in your own backyard. Another quick reminder, it's that the Great Predator Debate Series is out for your viewing pleasure. Last year, we produced a film called The Great Wolf Divide, which talked a little bit more about the history about the Sawtooth Pack and how the Wolf Center kind of came into existence and what our role as an organization has done and served towards wolves and a greater discussion of predators in the region here. And our second film that we just released is called The Great Predator Debate, A Nation's Dilemma, and it kind of talks about the dilemma that our nation faces with regards to how we deal with predators and what we do as management, how our management works with various places around this country when we deal with large carnivores like cougars and bears and wolves, etc., especially as they start repopulating areas that they used to once inhabit but had been pushed out by the development of the West. So it's a really interesting film. I highly recommend both of them. And we can always use support to continue filming and completing our third, which is going to be The Nation's Result, how we actually handle these issues and what type of solutions that we can come up with to ensure that we have a future for both for man and for wildlife. My film, Gray Area, Wolves of the Southwest, is also nearing its final stages. We're in the middle of editing right now, and it's looking pretty awesome, and I'm looking forward to finally finishing it so that we can share it and start generating awareness for the Mexican wolf. Last year, they had over 100 wolves in the wild. This year, the numbers actually declined, so it's now under 100. It's down to 97, and this is just a minimum number, but it still shows that there is a lot of work that needs to be done to get these wolves on the proper trajectory towards recovery. And my film's designed to generate awareness to hopefully facilitate that along its route. Also, this summer, it's exciting. We are doing our summer celebration on June 10, 11, Friday and Saturday, second weekend in June. Last year, we had an awesome, fun, amazing time with Casey Anderson, who is an adventurer, and he's a producer for National Geographic. He's got a lot of shows, America the Wild, that you might have seen on National Geographic TV. Really awesome guy. This year, we are also doing something very similar. We're bringing in Chris Morgan, who's a host and narrator for PBS Nature. He's had several amazing films come out through PBS. If you can go online, check it out. I highly recommend any of his films. They're just incredible. He's also been, for the last several years, producing a huge film. It's called Bear Trek, and it's just getting close to being completed, and it's soon going to get released. So we're excited about that. I'm really looking forward to seeing Bear Trek, and it's basically Chris going across the world, checking out various bear species across the whole spectrum of the different ecosystems on this planet, and how bears are essentially an umbrella species, and how that it relates to the health of our planet. It's really, really interesting. So I highly recommend coming out this summer on June 10, 11. You get to spend some time with Chris Morgan. And also, you'll get to be able to our Wolf Center and be able to visit the Owyhee Pack that's currently there. So don't miss it. Mark it on your calendars. And stay tuned for more information as we post it your way. Next month, we're going to talk with Chad Brown from Soul River Runs Deep. It's an organization that's devoted to working with vets and youth and empowering them through wilderness experiences in nature. All right. Well, now that we've kind of gotten the announcements out of the way today, we're going to get more into the meat of the program. So today we're talking with Mike Keckler. He's from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. And I guess, Mike, let's start at the beginning with Idaho. What is kind of the history of Idaho's wildlife? And with people moving in, how has that changed things?
Idaho has a terrific wildlife heritage, and it has since the beginning. The early trappers and traders documented coming through here and running into everything from buffalo to grizzly bears on the Snake River. And over time, of course, some of those animals left. They disappeared. But by and large, we've got one of the most diverse states in the lower 48 when it comes to wildlife. We've got, I think we have 11 different big game species, from some of the biggest predators to the biggest prey species. And people from all over the world come to Idaho to hunt, to view, and to experience the wildlife that we have here. It's something we're very proud of, and we don't take it for granted.
What have been some of the challenges of managing wildlife in the state of Idaho?
Well, there was a point in time when the native elk population was reduced to near zero, to the point where they had to bring elk in via train and transplant them. Now, this was many, many, many decades ago, but the landscape being what it is, the elk that were transplanted in took off, and they repopulated the state. And the same can be said for many other species that were hunted to near extinction. And this didn't happen just in Idaho. It happened all over the country. But that kind of hunting was market hunting. It wasn't regulated hunting like we have today. Back in those days, I mean, you were free to kill whatever you wanted, and a lot of people killed a lot of animals, specifically waterfowl, anything else they could kill, to make money on it. And it was hunters who recognized this couldn't continue, that they had to regulate themselves, and that was the birth of the modern conservation movement. Hunters and some non-hunters got together, and they created this model. It's called the North American Model for Wildlife Conservation. And through that, we experienced the populations, the healthy populations that we have not only in Idaho, but throughout the country.
Now, there's a lot of people that, you know, think that wildlife are very capable of managing themselves on their own. We you know, that people don't need to get in there and do it. But at the same time, you know, there's got to be balance in there somewhere, right? Especially considering that we've kind of already done a lot of stuff with wildlife management. You know, where does that stand today?
We think the North American Model for Wildlife Conservation is the premier model worldwide. It's worked for over 100 years. It's because of that model that we have the terrific populations of animals that we have today. And it starts with the fact that people were willing to regulate themselves, to regulate their activities, to ensure that they weren't having such a negative impact on these populations that it was prohibiting them from growing and from prospering on the landscape. And again, the model has been in place for over 100 years, and I think you just have to look around to see how well it's worked. We're sitting in the middle of downtown Boise at the MK Nature Center. And I mean, we could at any moment see a mule deer walk through here. That's just one tiny example of this giant success story that is this model, the North American Model of Wildlife Conservation.
Now, it's great to see that, you know, people are able to kind of help self-regulate this, to be able to help conserve and manage wildlife. Why is it the greatest benefit that it is self-regulated?
Well, it isn't self-regulated. It's regulated by agencies such as Idaho Fish and Game. And it works because people know that there are animals there to harvest, but those numbers are limited. It's not an open season anymore. There's a limited number of animals that can be harvested that still allows the population to prosper and to grow.
Now, historically speaking, you know, hunting has also been a way of life for a lot of people. And for some, you know, they can make a living at it. And if you look at the history of this country, for example, people did a lot of killing to make a lot of money. And for someone that may not know that, what does that mean? And what's the history? If you could provide maybe some examples of stuff in the past that people have used to generate money off of from hunting.
Well, Many of the waterfowl populations, for example, were wiped out for the sole purpose of creating designer hats and other things. You know, those great feather plumes you used to see on those hats way back when, that came about as a result of the market hunting. There was a great demand for that sort of thing. So people went out and they killed these birds at will in order to supply this demand. And that's just one example of many. Beaver were nearly trapped out in order to meet the demand for hats and various other accoutrements, is that the right word? Various other fashion needs, I guess, for folks primarily in Europe and on the East Coast.
Now, you know, is it the same kind of results that happened with predators across the landscape? Because, I mean, a lot of the predators were eradicated as well. I mean, specifically when you look at wolves and bears and cougars, they don't typically inhabit the same regions they used to prior to when, you know, settlers came in through the West. Now, is that the same type of thing? Was it economically driven, or what were the factors there?
Many of the big predators were hunted to near extinction, but it wasn't so much hunting. It was a concerted effort to eliminate these predators from the landscape in order to reduce the depredation attacks on livestock. That was the feeling then, that had to be done, and it was.
And how would you say that has changed over the years? How's the attitude towards predators and hunting specifically today?
Well, here in Idaho now, I think that people are very tolerant of the big predator species. However, they want them to be managed. They want to limit the number of depredations, the number of conflicts that occur. And that can be with domestic livestock and with some of our big game species.
So when you look at, you know, big game species or predators or carnivores, do they have specific particular roles? And what are those roles that predators play on the landscape?
Well, predators certainly play a role in the landscape. And it's one that very few people dispute. But the landscape isn't what it was 200 years ago when the first white people began to explore this area. There are a lot more people on the landscape. There is a lot more development. And animals simply don't have the ability to roam the way they once did. So as a result, there are conflicts that occur. And those conflicts have to be managed. Otherwise, folks won't tolerate these big predators as their neighbors.
So as part of your management, how do you find that balance between, you know, knowing, you know, how many, what the quota should be for deer or elk or for wolves or whatever the species is that you're trying to manage for? How do you find that balance?
Well, that's what we try to do. We try to manage species in balance, and that includes predators and prey. In areas where we don't have many predators, we have prey species that get into trouble. We have elk that invade haystacks and tromp through crops and things like that, which causes problems for people. That affects people's livelihoods, and that's not good. And so we try to manage for that. We have other areas where folks are trying to raise livestock, sheep, cattle, and the predators affect those folks. And that's not good either. It's not good for the predator. It's not good for the people that are making their living on the landscape. And so we have to try to manage to limit that sort of occurrence from happening. When we can manage it properly, the level of animosity and the level of conflict drops. And that's good for people, and it's good for the predators.
Well, now, there are some people that, you know, they look at hunting as being evil and wrong. And when you put into the fact that, you know, a lot of people that hunt, or they consider themselves conservationists. And are there any examples that you might think of that where hunters have actually played a role in actually conserving a species, they're not being eradicated. They're actually become more thriving, for example.
You know, I think some of the big keys that we've witnessed, there was a time when mountain lions, for example, were open season on mountain lions. They were a predator on the landscape. They were not classified as a big game species. They could be shot on sight at any time. In the mid-1970s, I think it was, they were classified as a big game species. As a result, the people who wanted to pursue mountain lands became their biggest supporters, and they are to this day. If they feel like we're taking too many mountain lions in harvest, regulated harvest, they're the first to let us know about that. And we see that also with black bears. Those are two other large apex predators that have flourished on the Idaho landscape for many, many years. And that's what we're trying to do with wolves. We're trying to create that balance, find that balance, where the conflicts aren't as prevalent as they were a few years ago, and the wolves are still allowed to flourish in areas where they're not getting into trouble. That's what we're trying to do.
And over the years, you know, there's been a lot of conflict whether it comes to hunting predators. And I know Idaho has been kind of the center for some of these conflicts over the years. What is the department doing to try to get the knowledge out there to people on how you're managing wildlife, and specifically, you know, working with wolves, particularly, what is the best course of action to help the public understand more about how you're managing these predators?
You know, I don't know that we're just trying to inform people, to provide them good information by which that they can make their decisions and shape their views. That's what we're trying to do. And we certainly understand this is a difficult thing to do. I mean, predator management is tough work. It is. It's controversial by nature. It probably always will be. But our hope is that, and we think we've demonstrated this, that people will be confident in what we're doing. We're not out to eliminate predators. We're out to reduce those conflicts, but to keep that population sustainable throughout the state in the places where they are, in order to keep them off the endangered species list. And we think we've done that. You know, we've had four regulated seasons of hunting now, and wolves are still doing very well throughout our state. The populations are healthy. We've got a minimum number of at least 600 wolves. The number is somewhere north of that. They're getting into less trouble than they were a few years ago. And some of our elk populations are beginning to show signs of recovery. So we think we're getting close to that balance.
So when you look at that predator and prey relationship and the balance there, how do you, you know, determine how to manage wolves specifically? I mean, if you look at how well and successful you guys have been at reintroducing wolves to that area, how did you figure out the right way to keep that balance in check with regards to hunting wolves?
Well, on average, wolves reproduce at a rate of 30 to 40% a year. They've done extremely well. When they were reintroduced into Idaho 20 years ago, I don't think anybody realized how quickly that population would establish itself and expand. We went from a few dozen wolves to well over 1,000 in just a short period of time. And the population growing at a rate of 30 to 40%. I mean, pretty soon much of the landscape was saturated with wolves. And as a result, they were beginning to have some major impacts, not only on domestic animals, but some of our prey species, specifically elk. Since that time, we've been hunting them, and the number of conflicts have dropped with people. And again, some of the elk herds are showing signs of improvements. In fact, many of them are, but there are still some that need some help. And that's where we're concentrating some of our control actions now.
Now, I know when wolves depredate on cattle, sometimes there are management decisions that are passed down to take action upon the specific wolf or wolves for that instance. How does Idaho go about dealing with problem wolves or areas that have seen significant impact on wolves to either livestock or to the native elk population there?
You know, it depends on what's going on. Sometimes if it's a depredation, they will attempt to remove a couple, two or three. Sometimes that works. If they keep coming back and depredating, then oftentimes they'll remove the whole pack. The control action occurs on a case-by-case basis. In some areas like the low-low zone, for example, where we've seen some major impacts on elk herds, yes, the goal is to remove entire packs.
So do you feel that the current level of management there in Idaho is working?
Yes, I do. I think it is definitely working. again, the depredations have dropped, the elk herds are beginning to show signs of recovery, and the wolves are still very sustainable on the Idaho landscape, doing very well. So yes, I think the management we've demonstrated over the last 4 years has been highly successful.
And now, you know, looking into the future, do you see, you know, any possible changes that might take place with how people and wildlife interact, specifically where, like today, traditionally, where they come into conflict with each other? Do you think there are ways that that might be addressed in the future?
To some extent. I mean, Idaho's still a very rural state. We have 1.6 million people in the state, and one of the most geographically diverse states in the lower 48. So there's a lot of room here. But there are still plenty of places where humans and wildlife can come into conflict. It happens quite regularly. Now, how will that be changed over time? There's no doubt it will change. You know, what will Idaho look like 100 years from now? Fishing Game just celebrated its 75th anniversary last year. What will they be dealing with 75 years from now? I don't think anyone knows. There's one thing that is definitely clear. There will be more people. And more people mean more conflict with wildlife, and there's no doubt that there will be some tremendous challenges that will have to be addressed in the future.
Now, I know there are often two sides to this argument. You have the people that obviously are pro-wolf and the people that are anti-wolf. How do you go about trying to mitigate some of those concerns from both sides and to try to maybe, you know, do you guys sort of pull them together? Or, you know, what is the Idaho Department of Fish and Game doing to work with some of the misinformation that may be occurring on both ends?
Well, certainly. Again, predators tend to invite controversy. And there is often information put out on both sides that is not accurate. So we try to set the record straight on the website the best we can through Fish and Game publications, etc. So we ask folks who are hearing, you know, one thing or another, take the time and do some research. And a good place to start is on the Idaho Fish and Game website. On our wolf management page, we have a lot of information out there about our experience in managing wolves. We've learned a lot over the last 20 years, and we continue to learn.
Well, I think it's good that you are taking the time to try to educate the people on the facts and just really, you know, putting it down to the very simple form so that they can go and do the research and get educated that way. But, you know, how does that education then impact the general public?
You know, again, I think most folks are comfortable having wolves as long as they know they're managed. That's what it comes down to. They don't feel powerless. And we've seen the level of animosity drop over the last 4 years since we began actively managing wolves. People are beginning to recognize the wolves are doing all right. They're doing great. They're not being wiped out, as some have claimed. And that's a good thing. Those who want them controlled, I think they're pleased, too, in seeing the level of depredations drop and the level of conflicts drop. They feel like they're being listened to and that people are responding. And that, in my view, raises the tolerance level for wolves and other big predators. We have to manage them. We just do. If we don't, then it's not good for anyone, people or the predators.
Now, I know we can't really tell what our future is going to be like when it comes to wildlife management. But what happens if we were to do absolutely nothing with regards to management? You know, what do you think would occur with our wildlife today?
Well, we have to do something. We just do. I don't think folks want wolf packs in urban areas. I don't think folks want grizzly bears in these areas either. Black bears, mountain lions. We remove light mountain lions all the time from downtown Boise. We just have to, because if we don't, something bad's going to happen. And what a tragedy that would be if a human life were lost as a result of something like that. It would not be good. It wouldn't be good for the predators either.
You know, I think you bring up a good point. You know, as our cities expand into more and more rural areas and become more urban, we're seeing, you know, bears and cougars being downtown more often. What do you do about that? And not, you know, why are we seeing these animals coming into these cities?
Well, there are various reasons for that. We've had black bears show up in town. Usually that happens as a result of a very dry spring, and there isn't a very bountiful berry crop out there for them, so they're looking for food. They follow their way down into town, and voila, they're here. Usually they run right up a tree, and we show up and dart them and remove them, take them out to a place and turn them loose. With mountain lions, oftentimes they're following the big game herds down into town. And same thing. They find themselves down here. This is territory that hasn't been claimed by another cat. They realize there's plenty to eat around here. It might be house pets in addition to other things. And so they decide to stick around. Most of them don't. They recognize this is probably not a good place to be. It's usually the younger animals, the younger bears, the younger lions that are, you know, just striking out on their own. They aren't sure where to go, and they find themselves in a place like this where the food sources are plentiful, and so they decide, hey, this is my territory, I'm going to stay put.
So as like wildlife is continually fluctuating and these numbers are moving around all over the place, how do you manage that, specifically when it's like these numbers are kind of like a moving target, so to speak, or is it?
Well, I don't know that it's so much a moving target, but you have to manage them in a pragmatic fashion. You really do. Again, in some areas where the impacts are greatest, you got to take action. In other areas where they're not having much of an impact, just let them go. That's, you know, our hunters help us manage wolves. And we probably sell 30, 35,000 wolf tags every year. Of those, maybe 300 actually harvest a wolf, either through hunting or trapping. So, again, that helps us with that goal of achieving that balance. Our hunters are our greatest tool for that.
So how are wolves classified with regards to hunting in Idaho? Are they, you know, I know it's like a game species. You know, you always hear about people getting these big trophy bears and such. It's, you know, what is the proper term for wolves there?
Wolves are a big game species in Idaho. Just like elk, just like deer, just like black bear, just like mountain lions. They are a big game species, and we manage them as such.
So do you think people hunt wolves more or less for a trophy? Like, you know, you see a lot of things happening, people go to Africa and such.
You know, I don't know, but people that take hunting seriously, a lot of them like to, you know, harvest many different species, and this is just one more opportunity they have in our state, and we think that's a good thing.
Because there's enough out there now that you're not eliminating them?
No, we're managing them is what we're doing. We're not eliminating wolves, we're managing them in a sustainable fashion.
That's the big word now, sustainable.
Exactly.
Is the Idaho Department of Fish and Game also helping the policymakers make decisions?
Sure, absolutely.
How do they do it?
Well, the legislature sets policy. The Idaho Fish and Game carries out that policy. And they need good information in order to do that. And that's the role we play. We are the trust managers. We are the managers of the wildlife, held in trust for the people of Idaho. And so it's up to us as managers to provide good information for the policymakers to make the right decisions.
So when you make a decision regarding, you know, wildlife management from a political standpoint or vice versa, how do you know that what the impact is going to be? Or do you get enough information beforehand so that you can basically ensure the impact is going to get the results that you're looking for? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, our people are trained scientists. They operate from the training they have, the scientific backgrounds they have. They are professional wildlife managers. They understand impacts. They understand what needs to be done to properly manage species. And, you know, that doesn't mean they don't learn. We all learn. Every day we learn. But we are adaptable. And if something doesn't quite turn out the way we thought it would, then we can adjust. And the end result is a good one. It's a positive result for wildlife in Idaho.
Now, there are a lot of people that claim that, you know, we're driving wolves back to extinction by hunting them, and that they're getting endangered again. Is that, do you think they have any valid points to that, or do you, what are your thoughts?
There will not be an extinction based on management. It's never happened, in fact, that I know of, in the lower 48 or in Alaska or in North America, since the North American model of wildlife management and conservation went into effect. A species has never been driven to extinction based on regulated hunting.
So moving into the future, I know there's going to be, you know, varying types of people with their points of views, but is there a place for predators on the landscape today?
I think you're going to run into different viewpoints, but I think many, just like other folks, recognize that predators have a spot on the landscape too, but they have to be managed. And they are the active method for managing those species, and they're proud of that. Again, it's not about trying to exterminate the species, it's about trying to manage it. And that's what hunters do, and they're very, very proud of what they do and their ability to help us control those various species, whether it be depredating elk, getting into crops, or depredating wolves attacking livestock or having an effect on other big game species.
Now, I know there's a lot of common viewpoints from, specifically from people who live out in the rural areas. They look at city folks as being kind of city slickers, and they're the ones that want wolves and bears and such. Now Idaho seems to be more of a rural, outdoorsy kind of state. Is that have any bearing on, you know, the hunting and the outdoor population of people and how that works in from like a city side to like, you know, out in the country?
I think most people who live in Idaho are here for the outdoors. Now, not everybody hunts, not everybody fishes, but they still enjoy the outdoors. In fact, most Idahoans consider themselves to be anglers, and many of them consider themselves to be hunters too. They may not go every year, but they still consider themselves to be active participants in those sports. And I mean, that's one of the great things about Idaho. We've got opportunity all over the landscape. It's a beautiful state, and people come here from all over the world, and the people who live here are proud of it, and they love to experience it, and they do it every day.
So what do you think the future holds for predators, and, you know, and how that's going to work with being able to coexist alongside people?
Well, I think apex predators can continue to grow as long as they're managed. Populations just, they have to be managed. Again, we can't have them, can't have grizzly bears in populated areas. We can't have wolf packs in populated areas. That's just a, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. It really is. And that's why we have to be active. And we can't just sit back and see what happens, because there's too much at stake. And that's not good for the predator. And it's not good for people, certainly.
Well, that pretty much wraps up our show for today. Just want to say thank you, Mike, for taking the time to talk with us about the Department of Fish and Game there in Idaho and how you guys are working to manage and conserve wildlife across the state of Idaho. It's been a privilege, and it's been really interesting to gain that insight, specifically considering how controversial hunting of wolves has been in the state over the last several years. You know, obviously, we deal with wolf advocacy on a daily basis as well, too. And so we're very well aware of some of the conflicts that people seem to get into regarding on what side of the fence they fall on. So thank you for taking the time to talk with us. Now, folks, remember to tune in on the first Monday of every month where you host another show of Radio Wild. And next month, it's going to be Chad Brown from Soul River Runs Deep. It's an organization that specifically works with Army veterans and youth, taking them into the wilderness to kind of help them on their journeys in life. And it's a really, really awesome program that he's got going on. So we're excited to talk to him about how he's doing that and how he uses wilderness as a key to helping these people out. Again, just wanted to say thanks for tuning in. And we look forward to talking with you next month on Radio Wild.